Session number 28645, Reel 2.
Suzanne, I think that we have digressed a little bit with your mother, which we will come back to, I think. You'd like to come back to her at some later stage, but I think you'd like to return to India.
Yes, there were one or two things. I'm not sure whether I mentioned them. Did I mention the Prince of Wales royal visit? That would be Edward the 8th, before he was king.
You did mention it.
I did mention it, and
yes.
the processions and so on.
That's right, you did.
I mentioned that, and the decorations.
Yes.
And the ball at the embassy.
Yes.
And my mother going to the ball.
Yes.
I did that.
Yes.
And did I mention Juggernaut?
Didn't hear Juggernaut mentioned. I don't have it in my notes.
Well, Juggernaut is a repulsive object. Hindu faith. And it's a great thing, like an enormous, huge wine barrel, which they drag along the streets. A lot of sweating men drag it along the streets, and it's very holy and all that. And people go into holy ecstasies and throw themselves under it, which is extremely messy. Well, I escaped my governors one day, and I went to the end of the garden, and they were taking Juggernaut along the road at the end of the garden, so I saw it, because it's quite rare to see it.
People sacrificed themselves under it?
Yes, but unfortunately I didn't see that. They weren't doing that. They were taking it along this side road to join the big procession, at which people would duly throw themselves under it. But I didn't see that. And, of course, there were very disturbed times even then, you know, in India. One's apt to think that it was all nice, quiet, piece of the empire and so on. But there were all sorts of difficulties going on and riots and so on and so forth.
Can you describe one or two if you saw them?
Yes, I was in one. The firm my father worked for. They had offices in Calcutta, but they also had main offices in Howrah. That's Howrah. In Howrah, across the river, across the Hooghly. And my father used to have to go across there. And one day my mother, she had a beautiful car, you know, and you know, I can't remember what it was. It was an open tourer, primrose yellow. And it was a very smart car at the time, and I cannot remember what it was. Anyhow, she was going to fetch him that day, so we all piled in, the governess and myself and my mother, and we duly went across the bridge. And when we got across the bridge, we fell into an A1 riot. The whole place was seething. So my mother turned round, and she said, told the governess to put me on the floor and to lie on top of me. And she drove right through the middle of this riot. My mother was an extraordinary person. Whenever there was something startling happening, she always did the right thing straight away. She got mugged in Innsbruck. Somebody tried to take her handbag. We always travelled with very heavy handbags because we had a lot of things in them. And she snatched the handbag back and gave him one over the head, and he fled. She was like that in emergencies. She was extraordinary. She always did the right thing. And she was only 5'2". Anyhow, she got me back safely through the riot. But there were things happening like that all the time.
Do you know, at that tender age, it probably wouldn't interest you, but do you know what provoked riots like this, or were they just...
Oh, they rioted at the drop of a hat.
Yes,
I mean, something disturbed them, and they'd go off on a riot. Mostly things were kept in order, but they did riot. Just the same as in Egypt, they rioted. It's a habit of the East to riot. They like doing it. died in Egypt. They came for me three times. My servant saved me.
This is many years later, isn't it?
This is many years later. We should come to that.
We'll come to that.
So, she saved us from the riot. And, did I mention the fruit bats? They were fun.
Yes, you did. You have.
Lines and lines and lines of them. And the butterflies and the elephant paws, we did that. Now, I think it was just Juggernaut and the riot that I didn't mention. And then, of course, there was the beginning of my mother's lame ducks. She had a passion for lame ducks. She was always helping lame ducks. And she had a friend in England. She thought the friend didn't have a very happy or interesting time, so she said she could come and look after me as a governess. The result of that was my mother did all the work and the friend just flirted about and had a good time. Then she rescued a German lady called Dolly. The Germans were already not very popular, so she gave her a job as a governess.
We're still in India.
Yes. And she was a very severe lady. I remember we were walking home one day and I was absolutely enchanted because there was a snake charmer on the side of the road doing his cobra work. And I did want to watch that. And she dragged me away by the scruff of the neck. I wasn't allowed to watch. There were all sorts of fascinating things going on in the streets, you know, and I was extremely interested in these things. But Dolly saw fit to remove me, and she wasn't interested. On one of the journeys home, yes, that's right, when she was employing this other friend, and we were going home on furlough, and the friend was going back at that time, my mother had had enough. So my mother looked after me on the whole voyage, and she flirted with the officers. She was a dead loss. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. And we did the snakes, didn't we?
Yes.
Yes, we did the snakes. So, in 1921, I suppose, my mother was back on furlough, and she bought this piece of land and started the building of the house.
Well, this one that we're in now.
Oh, no, gracious me, no. No, no, no.
Where then?
This was in Devon.
Right, in Devon.
Yes. And she had friends in Devon. And they took her round and she bought this 7-acre plot of land. It was a lovely big field. And then another field at the back of the house. And they built the most superb wall garden. The fruit we had from that wall garden was paradisal. And she got all this ready for 1922 and my father came back. She attended to the whole of the building. It was a lovely house, it was thatched. And to her design, it was a really beautiful place.
So of course you're now back in England permanently, aren't you? You personally?
Yes, that's right.
I was
six and a half.
Half.
We came back 22.
And your father came back later?
Yes, that's right. My mother came back with me to get the house finished and ready. And he stayed behind to pack up. He lost his job again. I mean, it was just like the uncles over again. He had two partners and they conspired together to get him out. My father had a trying temper. It was his great loss in life. And he also had a habit of teasing people in a way which he thought was all right, but which was actually very hurtful. And he never realized he was hurting people. he also had an Irish temper. His grandmother was Irish. I had two great-grandmothers who were Irish. And I think he inherited this temper from Ireland. And it went off at inappropriate moments. He also, when he was right about something, and he was always right about it, he was one of those people who was irritatingly right. And he was a wonderful worker, tremendous. And he never let anything pass that wasn't right. He was a magnificent worker and a highly intelligent man. But he wouldn't let other people forget if they'd made a mistake. And that doesn't go down well. But if you rub it in. And I think he did this once or twice. He lost his German job for the same reason. And so they conspired together, these two miscreants. And he was the best partner. And got him out. So he came back to England without any work.
So it had not been his intention to come back in 1922?
No.
So in fact what had been decided was your mother and you would come back to England and...
Just on furlough and then go back again.
And then go back again.
But yes.
But that turned into a permanent stay once you'd arrived because your father had lost his job.
That's right.
And in response to your father losing his job, your mother bought a piece of land, realising that...
No, she'd done that before.
So she was going to... So she bought
We were going to build a house anyway because we weren't going to stay there forever.
I see. Okay.
So...
No, carry on.
Yes, it was a beautiful house. And we... Yes, I thought those would irritate you in time. If I didn't mention it, I meant to. what was I going to say? Yes, we stayed at the Lynx Hotel, very famous hotel at Thurston. Now, I don't know how much it affected me, and I think there are things that happen to you when you're a child that do affect you for life in some way or other. In fact, I'm certain they do. But she put me to bed in this huge hotel, and I got frightened. So I climbed out of my cot, goodness knows how, but I did. And I got to the corridor, and the corridor was as wide as this room, and of course it looked like the end of the world to me.
So the corridor is as wide as about 12 feet.
Yes, it was a very wide corridor.
Yes.
With Turkish carpet, bright red Turkish carpet. And there was I in the middle of this, howling my head off and calling for my mother, and there wasn't a soul inside. So I toddled along this this dreadful corridor, still howling. I found a flight of stairs. So I crawled down those, and then I heard voices. So I thought, so there is somebody left in the world. So I went towards the voices, and it was from the dining room. And they had dining room. They had dining at specific times, you see, so everybody was in there. It was full. The dining room was full. And I appeared at the big doors. And everybody was absolutely shocked to the core, this small thing coming into the dining room. And nobody was more shocked than I was. I was petrified. And I think that's had an effect on me. All my life and going into public rooms, I'm still shy of going into public rooms. It's still an effort. Always has been during my whole life. And I think that was the cause of it. However, that didn't last very long because the house was soon livable in. So we moved in. It was a lovely place. Wish we'd never sold it. Still, we'd not have done our travelling if we hadn't sold it, because we travelled on the money we got for it. Goodness, it sold for £1,500.
When did you sell it?
Wait a minute. 33, 30. Must have been 34 or 35, yes, because that was when we...
So you had the house 15 years?
Yes.
Give or take?
Yes. And that was where my mother used to collect her lame ducks.
So further collection of lame ducks took place in Devon?
Oh, dear me, yes. Every time one of the missionaries she'd known and been friends with in India, every time they came home, they'd land on her. And, oh yes, one parson, he had a nervous breakdown in India from overwork, so he landed on her. And a rather lovely blonde missionary landed on her at the same time. She was not very well. However, they did so well, they got married. And instead of being a thin rake, he became plump and very self-satisfied. Oh, I'm sure that was a good thing. Dear, oh dear. And, the lame ducks, they were endless. There was one little woman. She was about 5 foot tall. And everything was always wrong. Mabel. She always grumbled. And my mother used to take her a large breakfast in bed every morning. The works. British breakfast as it was in those days. And she'd eat it all up, and then she'd complain that she couldn't eat anything. She complained incessantly. My mother did everything for her. Finally, my father got fed up, and he said, Mabel's got to go. So she went. What else did we have? Oh, a succession of missionaries. When they came on holiday, they came to us. Then she had a family she adopted who were very poorly off. She adopted them, and they used to come. One, two, three of them, that's four of them. And she used to do Christmas parcels for them every year with clothes because they were terribly poor.
And of course your mother was able to do this, to sustain this, partly because she was a woman of, how can I put it, modest, independent means.
Very modest.
Very modest.
And she spent them all on other people.
Can we just have a word about your father?
Yes.
The house has just been completed, and he, of course, returns from India.
He returns with all the chattels.
All the chattels, and...
So he...
But minus a job.
So, being my father, he did, wasn't miner's work for very long. He decided to go back to university. And he'd been, as I think I said earlier, he was taken at 14 from school and put into the works.
Yes.
The engineering works. So he went back to school and did his matric. And that gave him entry to London University. And he did a course at London University for which he got honours. And then he joined the Royal Air Force.
In some sort of engineering capacity?
As a tutor. He taught.
As an instructor?
Yes, the instructor.
And he had a commission?
Yes, he was a squadron leader.
That's what he ended up. So he went in as a pilot officer, of course, and quickly went through the ranks, or did he?
I don't think he was ever a pilot officer. I think he was a squadron leader.
Because of his age?
Because of his age. And in Egypt. He was posted to Egypt, and there was another man there who wasn't as good and was younger. And they posted and they gave him... The next step up before my father. He was his own worst enemy in a way.
Just to get the chronology right, Suzanne, he came back, London
yes,
University.
Yes, he did all
be.
That. Then he worked at three of the Air Force stations.
So when did he get out to Egypt?
Oh, that wasn't until 37.
Posted to Egypt in 37.
Yes, that was much later.
So in other words,
after that, we'd done all our travelling, and I'd been to university, and all sorts of things had happened before then.
Well, we'll come to that. But
he did 3 years, 3 Air Force stations in England.
So, and did he do 3 years at London University?
Well, I don't know how long it took him. I've no idea.
Okay.
But anyhow, he came out with an honours degree.
But the upshot is that between 22 and 37, he was in the UK and often living at home.
No, he was travelling around these three Air Force stations.
And did you and your mother live in married quarters, or did you stay in Devon?
No, we stayed in Devon.
Right.
Except for when I was miserable at school.
So there were, what I'm seeking to establish is there were plenty of separations.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, he used to come on holiday to the house. It was just when he had leave that he'd come. He'd come on leave, but he didn't live there. And during that time, my mother did all this writing and the work she did for Norman Gale, which is another story altogether.
And work for Norman Gale?
Yes.
Who was a poet?
Poet and a writer, yes. Well known in his time.
So, if we can come back to you.
Yes.
1922, father comes home. When did you go to school?
Yes. We had a year and a half, I suppose, of really lovely living in the country, just completely in the country. Surrounded by all the wildlife you can imagine. Masses of rabbits. My father used to shoot rabbits from one window, and he shot the rats that were in the hen run from the other. We had plenty of both. We used to have the rabbits, we used to trap them. There were hundreds of rabbits. What I don't understand is that if you have rabbits here, which we don't anymore because of myxomatosis, but if you have rabbits here, they eat things in the garden. But they didn't there. I think it was because they had plenty of fresh young grass in this huge field. And they used to just lollop about eating grass. Because my mother planted the whole field with the daffodils. Must have been a 7 acres. It must have been about a 3 acre field. And she planted it with daffodils and with bushes and all sorts of things. She employed the firm of Cressida. And they're still there in Cornwall, Cressida. They're still in active service. But they didn't seem to eat things. Of course, we had a wall garden. We grew all our vegetables in the wall garden. There must have been an acre of wall garden. So they couldn't get in there. But we had masses of rabbits. Once a year, we had the ferret men in to ferret them out. A hundred of them.
After 18 months of Arcadian freedom...
Yes, that was lovely. That was very nice.
You went to school.
And then two of the lame ducks decided they would start a school. And my father, who was always very generous with friends, said he would help them. He used to worry my mother because he used to spend money without telling her anything about it. Anyhow, he said he'd help them. And so, not only did he help them and buy all that was required for the school, but he decided to send me to it. And I don't think that did me any good. I think I suffered from that for a long time. Because they sent me to school, and my mother wept and I wept, gallons. We were both terribly upset. because she'd been educating me with the help of some of these lame ducks, because they were all intelligent women. They were people who'd been teaching in schools in India. And so they attended to my education. I knew all about Greek mythology when I was six. I knew a lot. They were very good that way, those two. They taught me a great deal. So I was much too old for school already. What the children talked about, I just didn't understand. I was beyond that and very miserable. So they decided I was ill, so they took me to a specialist in Harley Street. And he prescribed something which I now know to have been morphine because of the taste of it. So I had a dose of that every night, and I can't think that did me any good. And various other things they decided were wrong and treated. And I don't think it did me any good. But I spent... During the day, of course, one had lessons, but one was put to bed at a stupid hour when it was bright daylight. And I used to sit up in bed and invent countries with peoples and cities and all sorts of things, and I used to sail to these countries. I'd spend at least a couple of hours every night after they generally dosed me and put me to bed.
So the morphine didn't put you to sleep?
No, I don't think it was strong enough.
So it wasn't like the armors in India with a...
No.
Just a tip of opium under the fingernail?
Well, I suppose it would be equivalent, I don't know. It was. They said I had nerves, they said I was highly strung. I was highly strung. I was highly strung because I was taken away from my home. It was a bad move.
Oh, where was the school then?
In Godalming.
Oh, goodness me, I'm 200 miles away.
That's right. They were kind enough, but one of them was very sarcastic and used to take it out of us with sarcastic remarks, and sarcasm is a thing a child can't stand. It has a terrible effect on children.
Well, children don't understand sarcasm, they take it literally.
It hurts.
Yes.
It hurts terribly. Sarcasm is a dreadful thing to use on children. It's a real sharp knife. Because they take things literally, children.
Yes.
Mind you, nowadays, I don't suppose they were cutting the ice. Sure it wouldn't. They'd take no notice. They'd probably just answer back. But in those days, it did have an effect. So we stayed in Godalming for a while.
You stayed in Godalming?
The school.
Yep.
And I saw then... The first film which had colour in it. It was Ben-Hur, Tale of the Christ, with Raymond Navarro. And there was a sequence, the chariot sequence, which was done in colour. It was the first time in the cinema that there was colour.
Was this a silent film? It was, wasn't it? Did the first Ben-Hur was a silent film?
Must have been. Yes, must have been. I don't remember any sound. There'd have been the piano playing, of course.
Of course.
And the other film I saw at that time was The Wedding March, with Frederick March in it. Webb Gallons. They were two of the earliest films. Ben-Hur was very good. Then the school moved to near Hazelmere. Yeah, yes, Hazelmere. And they had odd pupils.
In what way?
Well, they had an autistic child. Very autistic. And we spent our lives being told to walk on tiptoe and not say anything to her in case we offended her and so on and so forth. And we had a Welsh girl with a very high temper. We had a syphilitic girl. I don't think the two mistresses knew what syphilis was. But I did. I've always had a very sharp sense of when there's something wrong with somebody and when it's not to be gone near. So I remember in Egypt when we did our